is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politricks. Politricks.
It's politricking time. Hello, I'm Eugene Khoza. Yes, you're on the right podcast. No, it's not Radical Entertainment Transformation. Fresh had to temporarily redeploy somewhere else, and I graciously accepted his invite to come stand in for him. So, wow, what a week is not downsizing, well, figuratively speaking. Anyway, asi kolapo. I'll be chatting to Botsang for the weekly politics feature. And if you think it's strange for a comedian to be talking to an analyst about politics, well, it means you haven't seen our parliament or politicians in action very lately, have you? So, let's get going. Welcome to this week's Politics with Botsang Muilwa and me, obviously, Eugene Khoza. Botsang, are you good?
My brother, thank you very much. Welcome, I'm good.
No, you should be welcoming me because this is your home.
I'm saying welcome. I'm
welcome. Oh, okay, thank you.
You seem very comfortable on the chair.
Yeah, I mean, really, what Fresh can do, I can't do better.
I like it when you say figuratively speaking, it's not downsizing. Yeah, we have downsized. You look so tiny in that chair. And I don't feel intimidated today by the tattoos and the heavyweight.
And the open chest.
Eish, brah.
Botsang, our first topic. The other thing I want to talk about today is the Human Rights Commission's decision to make school uniform gender neutral. What's your take?
Well, I think as a country, we should welcome that decision.
You know, and someone starts with as a country.
Well, as a nation.
Yeah.
Should I say that? Well, as a nation, we should welcome that. I'll tell you why. One, this decision by the Human Rights Commission, it is well in line with the constitution of the country.
Right.
We are talking about a non-sexist South Africa.
Right.
We are trying to bring up our kids in such a way that they can be comfortable in whatever they wear or do or how they look. Understand?
Yes.
So the minority, our constitution, you know, a Bill of Rights also protects the minority rights, and minority can be through the pigmentation or the minority in a population like white people are in minority. The minority group falls on the LGBTI groups as well, you know, and they are well protected and in the constitution of the country. Now, for the Human Rights Commission to arrive at this situation, opposition, supported by one, the school governing bodies, the national one, the Department of Basic Education. And I think us as parents, I've got school-going children, you know, and as parents, we should welcome that. But Eugene, let me tell you where it is important as well. It is not only about the uniform. This decision of the Human Rights Commission, it also talks about how pupils, your children at school, conduct themselves, how they look. Some people, they prefer to have bald hair. Some people prefer dreadlocks. Some people prefer beard like me and you. And they should be allowed to.
Still in school with a beard?
Yeah, why not?
Even.
Well, if it depends on your hormonal. You know, I'm not a scientist. But yes. I've seen 18-year-olds with beard.
Yeah.
And if an 18-year-old is still at high school and he doesn't want to shave his beard, he wants to comb it clean.
Yes, gotcha.
What is the problem with that? But it doesn't end there. You know, we had that situation or story a few years back of the girls' high school in Pretoria. You remember when the young girls protested for the afros and all those things. What if my daughter wants to don dreadlocks and they look clean? What if there's a boy who wants to do moropos or what we call ekasi, you know, like to weave their hair as they wish.
Or braids,
you understand? What if that? And it is well within their choice and rights. I know there's a thorn part of it.
Yes.
Where the some parents and some, you know, citizens may say, it looks like the country is transforming, moving into that situation of we are encouraging gays and lesbianism and cross-gender. And one school in the Northwest this week, yesterday on Friday, Women Rights Day, International Women's Day, not Human Rights Day, they decided to say the children must cross-dress. In other words, girls must come to school
as
dressed
boys.
In trousers or as boys, you are putting it correctly, and the boys must come dressed as girls in order to see if you will feel different, you'll be respected differently, you'll be treated differently. I think it's one of the elements that the school and the governing body have decided to embark on in order to bring equality.
So if it's enshrined in our constitution, like you're saying, and our democracy is 30 years old, why did it take so long?
Well, you know, bro, everything takes forever in this country. But there are religious groups.
Also a fact.
For example, There are religious groups, the ACDP, which is one of the parties in parliament.
Which I still don't understand how, Reverend Mishwe, right?
Yes, Reverend Mishwe, yes.
I feel like Reverend Mishwe and Bantu Olomisa have signed a special deal with the ANC to just remain in government. Because I've never seen their constituency.
Well, they do have a constituency for the fact that people vote for them. Well, bro, in politics, let me tell you, what you see in stadiums does not transcend to votes. People may fill up stadiums, but they vote differently. The fact that Reverend Mishwe, who majority of us, the so-called black middle class,
right.
Know, and some people, my kids will not know who's Reverend Mishwe in the ACDP, but he's got more votes sitting in parliament more than the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, which is a former liberation movement.
Right,
understand?
Right.
So it is what people decide to do when they arrive at the ballot box. It is also issues like these with the gender equality, you know, girls dressing up like girls, cross-dressing. Some people are saying, so what? Let's do it. I'll vote for that. But some people will vote just for that.
They will say, for that. That stands alone, yeah.
Yes, just that whole one thing. For example, I think the LGBTI plus community is going to welcome this decision of the Human Rights Commission very well. You understand?
Right.
I have a son who said to me when he heard this during the course of the week, who said to me, Dad, I will never ever go to school dressed like a girl. And I'm like, it's your choice. It's your choice. If you feel, but you know, what is important for me is if you look, I don't know who said trousers are for boys.
Yeah.
And dresses and skirts. If you look at the Middle East and North Africa, men wear things that look like dresses.
Right.
Understand,
yes.
Which is actually much more healthy for me and you not to keep our
shandies
yes,
restricted.
Understand? Yeah, restricted. I mean, doctors will tell you, let it loose, let it breathe. You see, so who said also girls have to wear trousers? They can't wear trousers.
They can't wear trousers.
When you look at the corporate world, look at what women's suits and slacks have done to the corporate world. When women walk into boardrooms dressed in slack suits and all that, we respect them, we treat them equally. You understand? It looks nice as well.
So do you think that a person is more respected wearing trousers than they would be if they're wearing a skirt? So if the same were to be true, if a male walks into a boardroom about to make big decisions wearing a skirt, would he be taken seriously?
Unfortunately, comedians like you, they take him as a joke, they'll make a fist out of that. But this is where we should demystify this myth of a dress is for girls, a trouser is for boys.
Manje, Botsang, are you telling me that if you walked into a company and the CEO comes to greet you, and he's wearing a skirt, you take that guy seriously?
That's a choice. Look, it shouldn't define. It should not. It should not define.
In an ideal world, yes, it shouldn't.
Yes, it shouldn't in an ideal
but
world.
But do I really want to see a grown man in an executive position wearing a dress at work?
Why do we go into meetings with the Arabs, with the Nigerians wearing dresses, and we still respect them? You know why? It's all in the mind. We have accepted that these dresses, whatever there's a name it's called, that the Arab nation is wearing, they go to the United Nations, they go to the African Union meetings, they come on diplomatic relations server wearing their, what we call the Arab clothes. And we have accepted it. Why when Eugene will walk into a boardroom, not
wearing a pencil skirt.
Wearing a pencil skirt and steal
it. I never. You know what, Butang, this thing here, the Human Rights Commission all of a sudden talking about what kids should and could wear at school, I'm a big conspiracy theorist, and I see it as a distraction.
Yeah.
The real issue here, a couple of days ago, it came out that over 300 cases that were recommended for prosecution at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission haven't been dealt with.
Yes.
Why am I not hearing the Human Rights Commission taking up space and doing interviews feverishly about those kind of things, and now we're here talking about are boys allowed to wear pleated pencil skirts or whatever at school, instead of talking about the equivalent of Nazis roaming the streets of South Africa, 300 of them who should be prosecuted.
It's election year, Baba, and the youth is wanted. The youth who are cross-dressing, who are, you know, my son draped their hair, they weave their hair, I don't know what you call it. And the target is to target the youth. The political parties, particularly the ruling party, is aware that the vote of the youth is going to be very important. And therefore, they are targeting them to say, let us do something that will appease to the youth. That's why they're targeting this thing at school. And you ask a relevant question, why this important? important decision only now after 30 years,
right,
when the education policies of this country have been amended so many times in the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
How come, even when there were crises, there were crises at the Pretoria Girls High School.
Yes.
There were crises in various other schools in the country where dreadlocks were banned.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? And they should have taken advantage at that time to realize that, no, we don't have to. And also, I mean, Eugene, I've seen a lot of young girls who are comfortable in pants. Some schools, right, even Gauteng and in the Free State schools, girls wear trousers, and it's okay, it's a common cause. I've even seen where boys wear skirts, like the Scottish skirts. But I think the Human Rights Commission, you are correct, they are lagging behind with a number of things that are politically important country,
yes,
which they could have acted on.
Yes.
They've acted on the cases of some people who were murdered by the apartheid government, but because those families had money, had lawyers, had resources to can pursue those cases. But generally, what was discussed at the Truth and Reconciliation Committee chaired by the late Bishop Desmond Tutu, that we haven't put that into place, and it has taken too long.
Why, though?
Look, I think there is no political will.
Why?
I think the ruling party, it will open a can of worms and thorns, and this is my personal view. I think that, you know, the human rights thing of the apartheid regime, it did not only impact on the apartheid regime. There are human rights elements that were reported to the TRC, and people don't know about this,
right,
about the atrocities that were committed by the liberation movements in exile.
Themselves,
particularly the ruling party. There are people who were murdered, some were buried alive, rapes were happening in the camps. And some of those things were reported during the TRC.
Right.
Understand? So there are people who were suspected to be Askaris, for example. And Askari is what they have defined for the sake of their viewers. And Askari is somebody who was called an impimpi, you know, a former or supposed to be liberation fighter, turned as an informer for the apartheid government. Some were banned, some were murdered, some were buried alive, we hear. And so I think that's one element. But the other element also is, you know, the Truth and Reconciliation Committee came with a process of wanting to step or put things under the carpet, and they are coming out to catch up with us. That's why the likes of you are now asking today, but what about those cases? Some people have lost grandfathers. Some parents, since the kids went exile, they never came back until today. Some, they heard that they died in exile. They never got the bodies. So those are some of the things that we have to unpack. You know, in Setswana, they will say, only a bowel, letopa. You must open up that and let it be a wound, and it will clean and heal properly. And we didn't do that in South Africa. We did not open up the wounds and clean them of the atrocities of apartheid from both sides.
So here's my view of this whole entire thing. When we spoke about what the Human Rights Commission is doing or is recently now engaged with, speaking about uniforms at school, you're saying they're going after the youth vote. I think the youth has never been a target market for voting in the first place. And I'll tell you why. I think the information about voting and teaching young people about democracy has never been a priority. If there's millions of rands that are given to people to teach people how to vote, then you can tell me more about that. It hasn't been happening. It's not trickling down to the youth who are supposed to be voting. I think all politicians, black, white, DA, ANC, EFF, whoever it is, has always targeted the mothers and the grandmothers of those young people and guilt-tripped them into going to vote so that their kids can get NSFAS or get jobs. But I don't think the youth has ever been a target to go and solicit votes from them. And I think we can see it now, because where's voter education?
Yep.
Where are the ambassadors? Where is the message being spread about youth registering and then voting, and then after that, who to vote for, and then after that, how to exercise their democratic right after they have voted and elected? Because from where I'm sitting, voting seems like a dead end. It seems like you'll go on the day in May, you'll vote, and then you'll never see the politician again.
You'll see them after 3 years when it's elections for local government.
Right.
But Eugene, you nailed it. You see, this is one of the purposes of this platform, this podcast specifically. To act as an educator to the nation. And your last part of the statement to say, where are the ambassadors of the IEC? Where are the ambassadors that teaches the not only the youth, the voters? Let me use the word voters, and I'll come back to the youth part. The voters to say, your vote does not end on the day you voted. Your vote goes to an extent of, if the councillor or the member of parliament or of the legislative assembly, whether provincial or national, is not that you voted for, is not conducting themselves in the way they promised.
Yes.
And in the way that made you as a voter.
What's your recourse?
What's your recourse, understand? Mm. Because there is a recourse to can hold them accountable. And the recourse is documented well within the constitution of the country to say, well, that's why we have by-elections.
Right.
That's why people...
That happened during the week when people are at work or at school.
Well, that's another element when they're mooring each other with fists at Ekurhuleni municipality. You understand? Those are some of the things and the truths we have to say, even the councillors or even the MPs in the national parliament are failing to do what they were supposed to do for 30 years. What can we do?
And
you are correct, but let me tell you,
the
political parties, number one, they are not pushing the IEC hard enough to can embark on that process. Mm. That's the first element. Mm. They have left the IEC to run with this whole thing.
Mm.
Number two, the voting ambassadors, we see them during the election period or phase, then they disappear.
Mm.
Number three, the IEC has a very good budget on voter education.
Really?
They've got a very good budget. One of my very reliable sources told me, for example, the SABC was allocated up to 100 million or even more for voter education, not once off, for a prolonged period.
Yes.
And I said to them, I don't have anything against the SABC, but who watches SABC news? Who have seen the IEC program of voter education on SABC? I can tell you less than 2% of the population have done that. And if you are targeting youth,
yes,
I would have said to the IEC, use the podcasts, because youth are there in between jokes.
But you can't control the podcast.
But that's, why do you want to control? It's a democracy. Why do you want to control
and the podcast? And also you can't... You can't skim on the top, you can't shy on the side.
Exactly. That's why last week, myself and Fresh, we had a panelist. People have been saying we must bring politicians to this platform and interview them. You know, who did I bring?
Mm-mm.
Two youth members from two separate communities. One boy, a law student from University of Pretoria, from Soshanguve, a colored girl from El Dorado Park, to come and hear the real stuff. Why do you want to filter? Why do you want to filter education? Why don't you allow the youth and the voters to can be free and talk about what they want to talk to?
Because exactly that reason, you don't want them to hold you accountable.
But you see, now that's no longer democracy. You understand? But again,
but we're living in it, Butan.
When you say, look, democracy for me, Eugene, it's a fallacy. You understand?
Mm.
It's on paper, and actually, I'm not a fan of democracy. I call it demon crazy because if you have a situation where rights, and you don't know where to draw the line, it becomes a problem.
Yes.
Now, when people exercise those rights and demand the impossible, it's also a problem for the state or for the law enforcers. When people demand the impossible, you can't have absolute rights without absolute control.
And
somewhere, somehow, there must be responsibility from both the government and both the citizen. Now, going back to your question of youth, why were they not targeted? They were not needed.
Mm.
Our grandmothers and our mothers, they will say, I've known the ANC or the Liberation Movement. They've given me an RDP house. They've increased my social grants, and they've paid NEFSAS. My kids have gone to school. That has been the voting ticket, but it is gradually receiving its dead end and expiry mode.
And what is it being replaced with?
Because the majority of the voters, according to the IEC,
yes,
the majority of the potential voters in South Africa, they are youth. 27% of the people who registered to vote now are youth. And let me tell you why they didn't care, except to some extent the EFF, because it's a youth-based organization mainly. I don't say the EFF only have youth. But with the exception of the EFF, the ANC itself, the DA would not care. The majority of the youth who are participating or not participating in elections in South Africa are black youth. So the DA would not care. They will want their votes, but to infiltrate them and to penetrate them, the racial line is still there. The historical liberation movement is still there.
Mm.
But the ANC knew that because youth are unhappy with them,
yes,
going to encourage them to vote, and I've said it on this platform before, it is dangerous for youth to go and vote for the ANC. It is.
So do you think that is why the IEC is ramping up its TVET college drive to speak to the youth? Because I have a different view on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's still increasingly speaking to classism. If you're going to go to someone who's already receiving education or in a higher education institution and telling them about voting, chances are they know how to exercise their democratic right. Exactly. What about the unemployed who are at home?
Who are languishing in the streets?
Yeah, now how do I teach those how to vote? And you've just answered that question for me by saying, that's the person that you don't want to vote because they're too angry.
They're too angry.
And they have time to hold you accountable. They're not at an office somewhere or stuck in four ways.
And you have used the right words. The students who are already at tertiary institutions, and you see how clever they are. Why don't they target universities and colleges, nursing colleges, universities, teachers' colleges? Why do they go to the TVET? Again, you can say, I don't undermine the education of TVET colleges. And people must not read me wrong.
Yes.
I am saying they will even have challenge, the same challenge as going to the unemployed youth in the township.
Yes.
That political parties are going to. Especially the opposition.
I get you.
The Patriotic Alliance, the EFF, and others, they are going to youth who are unemployed.
They're going to where they are.
Yeah, where they are.
And harnessing their disgruntlement.
Exactly, to say the ANC have put you into that position, we want to take you out of that. But the IEC goes and target TVET colleges. Nothing wrong with that. A good move to go and target those, because they are potential voters who have a little bit of NEFSA's access to education.
Mm.
Why would they target formal tertiary education, not to say TVET is informal,
but
universities, the Western Cape, the VETs of this world. Why don't they go to VETs? Because they know those radicals of FISMA's fall are still there, and they'll be faced with...
They're still unhappy.
And they're very educated, very informed. They are educated and they are informed. So there's an element of twisting the mind of the youth in the country to say, go and vote, but be very careful. I saw one clip during the course of the week which made me very upset, actually. Mm. One ANC leader was addressing a meeting and saying, somebody said they are not going to vote ANC. ANC did nothing for them. While that person was talking inside an RDP that was built by the ANC. You see that blackmail?
That's blackmail.
Yeah, it's blackmail. And who said the RDP house was built by the ANC? The Reconstruction and Development Program for low-cost housing or free housing. It's a program of the country, not of the ruling party. Yes, the ANC is the ruling party. And this... It may have been crafted in the Luthuli House, but it became a national document. So I am not a member of the ANC, but I support the RDP because it's a national policy. So if the ANC wants to claim glory for all the good things they've done, because they've done the grants, and they must also claim glory for all the wrong things that they have done. They must claim glory that fuel is 25 cents a liter today. They must claim glory for the portals, for all the murders in the country, for the crime that's going up. You can't play double standards. And those are some of the challenges the IEC. The IEC is supposed to be independent. It's not supposed to be aligned even to the government. They're not supposed to. They're supposed to actually open fairly what is happening. But I think the project of TVET is a good project. It came a little bit late.
You think that was deliberate?
I think it was deliberate. But I think gradually those who control the IEC, whether people like it or not, if I deploy you as a president, I always tell people there is no independence in South Africa. You know, I've made an example the other day to say the president of the country is appointed by parliament. MPs are voted through by us.
Mm-hmm.
The parliament elects and appoints judges. The president approves. You understand? Yes. So where is the independence there?
And that's why I find it strange when people... After elections, they put all their hope on their political parties that they voted into power to criticize the same person that they elected into power.
Exactly.
And minority parties never tell their constituency that the person sitting there in front that we're objecting to was voted in by us. Because every voter elects a party.
Yes.
That party appoints a representative. That representative is fielded in parliament. And that representative that's fielded in parliament is voted in by the parliamentarians.
Well, I think you must leave comedy and go into politics, you know, because you've got it all right on how it works. The system works differently. I look at Julius Malema and the EFF criticizing Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of the Republic. They put him there.
Yeah.
They were part. If you go back, the EFF was part of the team that supported Ramaphosa to be the president of this country.
Mm. So
you know what they are saying today? Not only the EFF, all political parties. Mm. We had hope. We thought he's different. How will he be different when he comes from the same political party? These people tore the party line. Ramaphosa is touring the party line of the ANC. And to show that he's touring the party line, ANC people will come and attack me, and some of them, there is nobody, he's not doing that. He's not implementing the resolutions of 2017 and 2022. Why are they keeping him if he's not implementing them?
Why are they keeping him?
Nah, it's because he's touring the party line. The ANC, in my view, has no willingness or drive to can liberate these people. The ANC in 2017, Eugene, 2017, my brother, in Nazareth, took a resolution for the return of the land to the black people. They took, it's a resolution.
But speaking of returning the land to the black people as a resolution, now that seems to be what the MK is using as a meal ticket to get to people's hearts. And then the same IEC has pronounced that they're barring a Jacob Zuma, who is the leader of the MK party, from contesting. Do you think that's
I'm scratching my head.
And you didn't want to ruin your hair and put headphones back. Now, yeah.
Look. First of all, yes, the MK is running with that Pan-Africanist land. You know, even Malema, the EFF has been talking about the return of the land from its inception in 2013. Mm. It is the PAC founding policy. The PAC has been very consistent.
Then why is it that the PAC does not have the traction and the credit that they came up with this policy, and they haven't wavered in 30 years of democracy?
Yeah. They since actually 1959.
They haven't wavered.
They haven't wavered. They've been, you know, I was telling people the word Potro when I learned Potro, which is the first liberation movement in South Africa. Potro is a closer term that means pure or upright.
Okay.
And as I said, So they haven't wavered. But the reason it is because we were caught up as a nation.
Right.
On flimsy things. We are caught up on having an RDP. We are caught up on education allowances. We are caught up on social grants. We are caught up on peace as well. We saw it as impossible. You know, I've heard black people saying, land, what are you going to do with land? I've heard black people saying that. What are you going to do with land? As long as I can build my house. But now, because of what parties like the PAC or AZAPO or the BLF, the Africanists, you know, left side, have done over the years, the education part of it, to inform and educate people, to conscientize people that when we speak of land, we don't talk only about where you build your house.
Yeah, we're not
talking
about
about the rivers, we talk about the sea, we talk about economic land, the mines and the mineral resources that are still in the hands of the people that acquired land during apartheid or colonialism. Mm. Now, while they were busy doing that, which is correct, mushrooming political parties like the EFF and others, the Patriotic Alliance and now the Umkhonto we Sizwe Party, they've taken advantage of that situation and they are running with it as a ticket.
Do you think people will fall for it?
People are falling for that. If you look at the numbers, bro, if you look at the conduct of the, if you look at social media, people are falling for that to say, yes, the ANC did their part. They delivered ABC. Mm. And they stopped there, they failed here, but now we have to move to the land question because now people know what is the importance of the land. Some people think the PAC will lose even more votes. I've got a different view. I think they will gain more votes because even Umkhonto we Sizwe and Julius this past week have said the PAC has been correct since Sobukwe time regarding the land question and the type of freedom we want. We don't have the economic freedom. But I also think the IEC, going back to your question, regarding the pronouncement of Jacob Zuma, that was very disappointing. One, it was reckless, in my view. Two, it was dangerous, and it's very disappointing. Mm. There are so many of us in this country who have criminal records.
Hey, don't count me.
Are you that clean? I don't know how many drinking, driving tickets you have or overspeeding. It's a criminal record. But I had a criminal record at some stage.
Yes.
You know, I was eligible to go when I was active in politics to go into parliament in 2013, 2014. Mm. And I could not because I had a criminal record. Mm-hmm. You understand? But let's go back to the Jacob Zuma and the IEC issue. Mm. Yes, he's got a criminal record that he was sentenced to imprisonment without an option of fine for 15 months.
Right.
Why did the IEC feel they have to get up and pronounce that? Why?
Don't you think it's their duty?
No.
As an independent electoral commission to tell us who is eligible to stand, to be elected and not.
Okay.
Don't you think it's their responsibility?
It is their responsibility. Why would they specifically target Jacob Zuma? That's where the wrong part is.
Okay.
They should have talked about it generally. We have spoken about it on this platform. Generally, if they want to do it as part of voter education, they could have talked about who is eligible, who is not eligible. Don't say Jacob Zuma is not going to be. Why did they have to answer that? Especially before Umkhonto we Sizwe Party even issued its list. Remember, the closing date was yesterday on Friday. So Umkhonto we Sizwe Party hasn't issued its list, or it hadn't by the time the IEC pronounced on this.
Right.
What made them feel compelled to say Jacob Zuma doesn't qualify to can stand for any political position.
What do you think made them feel compelled to take that decision?
Look, it's again, if you want to ask me, I will tell you that the IEC, as I said at the beginning, it's also captured for something. It's also being controlled by the ruling party. You understand? It is also to slow down and put less traction on Umkhonto we Sizwe, which has gained, and to slow them down to say, hey, don't get too excited with this.
Your guy won't go in there.
You understand? So they dropped their ball of independency when they did that. They should have not done that. They should have done it strategically. If I was sitting in that position, I would have said, I'm going to have an interview and say who's eligible to vote, especially that they are independent candidates now. And I said, they should have that. Don't mention the Jacob Zuma thing. The Umkhonto we Sizwe party hasn't said Jacob Zuma is their candidate. They haven't said this, even their leader. You know, the other day I said to people, where do people get this story that Jacob Zuma is the leader of MK? Jacob Zuma is a member of the ANC on suspension. He has been the president twice in this country. He doesn't qualify to be the president again, not because of his criminal record, because he has served
the
two terms.
The law says so, yeah.
You understand? The law says he can't. And they haven't said he's the president. He's a mascot. I call him a mascot. If you have a mascot during the World Cup, is the mascot a referee or a player? No. Yeah. You understand? And for me, I think the IEC played into the hands of Umkhonto we Sizwe, because now it has angered the people. It has made people to start...
galvanize them.
You understand? To say, oh, they want to stop us because Zuma is with us. They are doing a lot of booby traps and they are falling into those traps.
So do you think one person that fell into that booby trap of thinking that Jacob Zuma was with them is the EFF as a party? Because at some point it looked like they had a cozy relationship. Bokal Niehaus went to the EFF. Bo from the Free State, Makhachule, went to the EFF. Last minute, when we thought Zuma was going to sign the deal and wear the shirt, there was an MK party.
Well, the chess player showed his chess. Look, Ace Makhachule from the Free State formed his party. It has now joined MK with the BLF. They're going to vote with MK.
Right.
But let me tell you, and I've been telling people, and for the first time, you know, you're privileged you can hear it here.
I thank you.
This was all Jacob Zuma's strategy.
From the beginning.
And long before he left the ANC. All these mushrooming political parties, from the ATM to what? Has been planning this. That was the only way he had to can punish the ANC.
Right.
And that's why you saw this past week.
Are you telling me he's been planning to punish the party while he was still president of the party?
Because it was losing traction. He could not implement the resolutions from 2012 of the ruling party, of his own party.
Right.
He could not implement the people who saw Jacob Zuma as a socialist, as the ground person, as the people's person, who is more of, you know, a nationalist. He couldn't implement that, what his supporters wanted in respect of the party.
Right.
Because, you understand? So I think he wanted to find a way. And when he realized, I think the mistake they did is when they recalled him, like they recalled Thabo Mbeki. But Thabo Mbeki behaved the same way. When he was recalled, we know that he helped founding of COPE. The only difference with Thabo Mbeki and Jacob Zuma is that Jacob Zuma founded many other political parties, not just one.
The children of Zuma.
You understand? So he split the disgruntled people to the formation of many political parties. And you know why? In 2013, Brooke, I wrote a paper about that, and I titled it the wild dog approach. Mm-hmm. You know how wild dogs hunt?
Mm-hmm.
When they hunt a pig, wild dogs are very tiny animals with sharp teeth.
Mm-hmm.
When they hunt a beast, like a buffalo, for example, they will eat it while it's running.
Mm.
So they chow, swallow. Then they run to the ranch to can release so that the old, the sick, and the young ones eat while they go back and eat it alive. And Jacob Zuma applied the wild dog approach to the ANC with all this. And he made peace with people that we thought, and the media created an impression that Julius and Zuma hate each other.
The Tea Party.
That how many teasers? Yeah, they were together this week. He wished Malema his birthday this week. The EFF has come out and said they are prepared to work with the PAC as well as with MK Party for the land question. The DA has said they will work with the ANC if it's not Paul Mashatile there and if the ANC has no relationship with Julius Malema. So you can see what is happening. And who's at the center of all that? Jacob Zuma. People can say we praise him too much, but I'm talking realistically, what happened on the ground.
Yeah.
He knew how to play on the ground. So the ANC is being weakened not because there's a strong opposition party,
no,
but because there's a fragmented opposition in the country.
Do you think the average voter knows all of this? And from my understanding and just looking from the outside, it seems like all political parties have given up on winning the majority of votes. It looks like all of them are prepping themselves for a coalition.
I think you've got it right. I think you know, people, the danger is people are asking, if not the ANC, so who?
Then who? That's me.
Yeah, but I can tell you, even political parties, even the African National Congress, the ruling party, has prepared themselves to say there will be no outright winner. I'm one of the people who have said there'll be no outright winner after the 29th of May. Also because of the independent candidates who have come into play. Also because of the rise of at least four political parties of the center-right, like Rise Mzansi, Bosa of Maimani, and Action SA. They are growing.
Patriotic,
you know, that
Alliance.
Action SA and Umkhonto Wesizwe Party are the fastest growing political parties in the country.
That's crazy.
At the moment, according to stats and numbers.
Those are facts.
Those are facts. Understand? Those are facts. So there'll be no outright winner.
I would have expected the Patriotic Alliance to be up there somewhere.
It's also growing. It's also
but not
growing.
As fast as those two.
Patriotic Alliance is doing its footprint very well. They've got their target market to the colored community. They're not restricting to that, but they were very clear to say
from
we are
beginning.
Going to target the marginalized so-called colored people all over the
and
country.
And then Bosa, you know, who is Bosa talking to? Because I see Ayanda Alipayne out there like she was never working for the government, talking against the government. So I'm saying...
You still say working for the government. She's my former colleague at Transport. And she went and she attacked Fikile Mbalula, who's the former spokesperson of Fikile Mbalula. I'm like, wow, Ayanda. But no, that's how politics are. You sleep with me today after 1 week, Baba, I'll talk so bad about you that I don't know you.
Sounds like Tinder.
But look, again, what is shocking, Bosa has come out, not Bosa, Rise Mzansi, has come out shockingly to, you know, like fast growth, but they have the money. I mean, the Oppenheimers gave them 1.5 million.
Then who's funding Bosa?
The same guys. This I was telling Fresh the other day. So funny that all these political parties are funded by the same people. They just
the extreme
give this
leftist
one bigger
one.
And this one bigger. But look, the white capital that is funding the major political parties, the ANC and the DA, have decided to also fund these small ones to counter the Jacob Zuma creation on this other side.
Who's funding the EFF?
Well, the talks has been to say it's Mazoti, but Julius will quickly tell you that the EFF is funded by its members, its parliament allocation. But we know that's not enough. They're donors, obviously. The EFF, friendly speaking, is one of the parties that have declared their books religiously to parliament and to the IEC of their funding. But Baba, we can talk about money that went into the bank account. We don't talk about the one that came with a suitcase.
Yeah.
So this policy of political funding, it can operate up to a certain point, there's limitations. You understand? Because if you give me 100,000, 10 people come and give 100,000 in a suitcase, how am I gonna come to that to the IEC? Understand? It's a very tough challenge, but political parties with money, they'll make the inroads, they'll do very well. And sadly, the same bunch of white capital that is funding them. That's why parties like the PAC, AZAPO, the BLF, they will not make it because they've got a principled position to say they will not accept
take money from
white capital or the imperialists or people who are still heavy, who are taking our minerals to make trillions, and they give us a few millions to control us.
Jeez.
And I think it's a principled position.
Just now, recently, the DA took the ANC to court, obviously, to bring out the minutes of their cater deployment policy. Do you think it's realistic that, as a country, we think the ANC is the only one who can implement cater deployment? Do you think the DA does not do the same as well?
Nah, we spoke about it. They do it. Everybody does it. It's common practice in politics. The reason they are going back to court this past week, it is because they say the ANC did not disclose everything. You remember they went to court and they lost when they challenged the policy.
The policy itself, yes.
The policy, but that's done. The court has ruled on that. They said, but now they want to go to court and say the ANC did not disclose everything because, again, due to the infighting in the ANC, somebody leaked out information of the WhatsApp conversation of the... You know, when you are a committee, you can form a WhatsApp. It
yes.
is common cause.
Yes.
Leak the information that was not on the documents that were released to the DA.
Got you.
But also the ANC had said to the DA, the records of 2013 to 2018, they cannot be
they
found.
They cannot be found, yeah.
You understand? And now with the leaked document, it shows that there were engagements. Yeah. So that's why the DA... I don't know how far can you go. If you want information from me and I say to you, I do not have it, And then you go to court and you say, but somebody, I have it. The court will say to the DA, bring the one you have. Let's challenge
How much can black people trust the DA?
Look, I've said before, the Democratic Alliance, it's a former white, lily white liberal party. South Africans still vote based on the color line. The DA has showed disrespect, if I may use that word, towards black people. That's why you find most, if not all, of their leaders, except Solim Simang is the remaining black leader of the DA. All others are new. They have left and they formed Mashaba, Maimani, the gentleman who was the leader of Gauteng, formed a political party. You know, almost all these people.
Mahashule Ghana is with Rise Mzansi.
You see, and all those. So I don't think black people will have confidence in the DA. And the DA, to be the official opposition party, it's been threatened by losing the black vote. And I think they may lose being the opposition to either the EFF or MK. They may lose.
How much can the black middle class trust the EFF?
They don't. Black middle class, very few. They don't trust the EFF. I don't think they don't trust the EFF, the political party. But I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm being regarded as a black middle class. I don't know what makes BMC. But people don't trust Julius. They say he flip-flops, he says this, he behaves like this some other time and all that. But you know what, Eugene? Controversies, EFF and ANC, it's the same thing. If you look at the EFF, it's the youth league of the ANC.
Right.
You understand? And people can scream and tumble. It is the whole youth league. They can actually go back and the youth league will be vibrant. And when you look at
that's crazy.
And when you look at controversies at the party, it is the ultra-leftist hardliners
of the ANC.
Of the ANC. Let me tell you what's going to happen. Should these two parties come up, you know what Zuma and Julius are going to do after this? They're going to say to the ANC, we have these numbers, maybe 2020, I'm just using 20 as an example, percentage.
Right.
And say to the ANC, come and talk to us. You are going to implement our radical policies if you want this
on
vote.
Land, immigration.
You understand? Land, immigration, free education, and all those left radical correct policies of the ANC. And for me, I am not that excited about controversies and EFF because I know they are part of the charterists of the Freedom Charter of the ANC. They believe in the ANC. They are
bluffing.
They believe. They love the ANC. Julius loves the ANC. He doesn't love the ANC of Ramaphosa. He doesn't love the ANC, what he's doing today. But most of the people are children of the ANC. If you look at the PAC itself, and I always tell people, the PAC is actually the real ANC. When the ANC departed from the 1949 program of action and the founding principle of Mayibuye, when the ANC said Mayibuye, the Pixlika Isaka Seme in 1912, what were they saying? What must Ibuye in Africa? So when the ANC adopted the Freedom Charter, then the PAC remained with the founding principles and policies of the ANC.
Right.
Understand? That's why the PAC kept on the land question. That's where the question went. So Sobukwe said, land first, the rest shall follow. For us, for example, the PAC does not believe in multiracialism. The ANC believes in non-racialism. The PAC believes in human race. The only race that the PAC is human beings. There's no black, white, colored, or Indians.
The human race.
You understand? So the EFF and controversies, I think they are existing to correct where the ANC has failed. And it will not surprise me after the elections that they go to bed with the ANC. It will not surprise me.
You've obviously heard what happened in Ekurhuleni most recently. The EFF saying they want white members. Do you think that's realistic? And also that phone situation.
Well, let's start with Ekurhuleni fist fight.
Yes.
When you started the show, you said, if you think a comedian cannot talk politics, you saw them. No, that was a circus. But you know, it happens all over the world that MPs beat each other. South Africans must not be surprised. In other countries, people go into parliament, issue knives and guns, and they throw shoes at each other. It does happen. For me, it doesn't surprise me that people go into fits. I don't say it's the right thing.
Yes, but it's not
it
surprising.
It doesn't surprise me. Unfortunately, who's going to suffer in Ekurhuleni? The residents of Ekurhuleni that voted those people
Maybe let's go back, Botsang. What was the dispute about?
Look, the dispute is, remember, it's a compromised
coalition.
Coalition.
Right.
The speaker is from the EFF.
Yes.
Just like in Joburg, the mayor is from one small party, the AIC.
Right.
You understand? Mm-hmm. And the ANC and the EFF, they've put the AIC there. Now, other parties, particularly the DA and others, they don't want the AIC anymore.
Mm-hmm.
To be the leader of Ekurhuleni. So it was a motion of vote against the mayor. And now there's a saying that the speaker, who is EFF, and the EFF, they are controlling the mayor. They've got too much control to
over the mayor.
So the ANC is not happy about that. Now remember, the mayor was put there by both the ANC and the EFF. Mm-hmm. So when they went into the chambers last week, the ANC and EFF differed, which was a sad state of affairs. They differed and they created that. You know what did they do? They played into the hands of the DA and others to say, you can see your coalition that is fake, that is not governed by principle, that is governed by not wanting DA to be in there. Remember, they removed the DA mayor to can put their compromise mayor. Mm. And what has happened in Ekurhuleni? Wow. It is demonstrating to us what may happen in a national government should there be no outright. Because it happened in Tshwane, it happened in Joburg, it happened in Nelson Mandela Metro, it happened in Ekurhuleni. There's instability,
so this delivery
suffers. Yeah, so that's what happened in Ekurhuleni. But the issue of Julius and White, I must actually take a proper position because I've seen comments on people that are saying, I don't like the EFF, or I criticize the EFF. I criticize every political party where they need to be criticized.
Mm.
And where they do well, I praise them. What shocked me with Julius this week, it's when he said, and this is where it becomes controversial.
Mm.
When Julius Malema said he wants, he was addressing the EFF meeting, towards the formation of the party list.
Right.
He needs white people. And this is how he talk. I need white people in those lists. There must be white people to show that the EFF is not a racist organization. We need white people to be on our list. Mm. And I was like, wow, Julius, I thought to be on the list, you must earn it.
Mm.
You must have a branch. Mm. You see where I come from.
You must mobilize. You must get buses. You must have members. Sign them up.
Mm. Even if they are not white, you must have a branch of at least 101 people.
Those are the rules.
And the practice, it has been the
people have been fired for that.
Thanks you mentioned it. I wanted to say to the members of the EFF, why don't you ask your commander-in-chief or your president or your leader to say you fired people in KwaZulu-Natal because they failed to rally people and make buses. And Julius, even in the past, they fired people. I don't want to say Julius the person. The Central Command Council of the EFF, they fired people because they failed to cooperate, branches, 101 people. Now you want white people on the list. How should they get into this? Are you going to co-opt them?
Mm.
I know the EFF manifesto and policy does not talk of black, white, no racism, you understand? But it has happened before. And I wanted to remind Julius that, by the way, you have had Indians there that were co-opted. That lady who was the treasurer general, she's now a lawyer, who was the treasurer general of the EFF, I just forgot her name.
Mm.
She never came with branch. She was co-opted and she was in parliament.
Busuwe Mkhwebane,
for example, she came in. So if they want white people, but let me tell you, I know how politics work. You know what is Julius doing?
Mm.
Preparing to have few white faces there, preparing a position for
Kalni House.
Yes. So people in the EFF,
yeah, but, nah.
But what do you think can it be for? Why don't you?
Yeah.
Why and why?
Hey.
Why do we need to color ourselves with some white color to look relevant? The EFF is not a racist organization.
Mm.
It is non-racial organization. It's in their manifesto, and they've welcomed white people from as far as Swartrekkens. I've seen people in the most racist towns of South Africa joining farmers, joining the EFF, which is good, you understand? Mm-hmm. But why do we have the EFF have to come and say, I want white people on the white people must go and work, bring their members, bring their followers, and their followers must be colorless. To can be elected by a branch to say, this is our nominated person to can go there, not to put them on the list, let them work for it.
What do you think was behind the abstention of some EFF members when Judge Sloppe was being... how should we put this politely?
It protest. I think they were protesting. I think it was in protest, which look, it's democracy. You can decide, no, I'm not going to be part of this. I'm abstaining from this. But it doesn't help to abstain. You must register your protest. You must refuse. Don't just abstain. You must say no.
But that's what we saw happening. People just didn't show up. And now a couple of days ago, Chira came out and said she had medical emergency, she had family responsibility.
Yeah.
And now she will apologize by buying 2 gazebos. Is that where we're at now?
We give people peanuts and crumbs in order to say sorry to the South African people. And that's how to keep people, you know, conscientized wrongly, wrong form of conscientization. But look, I think Julius is also doing a damage control by meeting the former judge president Hlophe. You know,
right.
They're meeting and engaging on the side.
Do you think he's going to join the party?
I don't know. I don't know if, you know, about joining the party. You know, when one person joins a party and all that, and he's not a crowd puller, look, Judge Hlophe is a professional. He's got options now, you understand? He's got options. There's MK party, definitely not the ANC. There's EFF and all that. So joining, look, for me, it's not about belonging to a political party or filling the stadium anymore. It is those people that we are going to galvanize and to rally to can go to the ballot box and put their eggs. I think that's what matters.
Speaking of people that can galvanize and rally people to go to the ballot box, what do you think the role of independent candidates is? And do you think South Africans know enough about the role of independent candidates?
No, I don't think our people know enough. I think the between now and the election day, the IEC must intensify the teaching of people about independent candidates. I think they should intensify that and how it will operate the proportional. You know, they are not generally in like a party. There's proportional representation, proportional numbers. Me and you, we may know about it, but the general person on the street doesn't know about
Please
it.
Please tell the general person.
Understand that. Look, for example, they've got limitation on the number of votes that they can have. If they have a certain number
as
of votes.
As an independent candidate.
As an independent candidate. Let me use an example. You need approximately, and depending on the number of registered voters, you need approximately 50,000 votes to can have one seat in parliament. I mean, using the margins of the previous elections. It may be less, it may be more now, okay?
Yes.
Now, if you get 70,000 votes as an independent candidate, you only take your 50,000 to go to parliament.
Right.
Your 20,000 votes, they fall away. And that's the sad part of this whole process.
Yes.
You understand? People do not know about that. Imagine if you need 50,000 votes and then you get 89,000 votes. What about your 39,000, almost 40,000 votes that you can utilize? You can't even team up with the next independent candidate and say, come with your 20,000 vote, I've got another 39,000, let's go together. You can't.
Do you think the independents will have an impact in parliament?
Yeah, a few of them, they will. You know, I think the guy who used to be the leader of the AIDS, the HIV campaign, I think he's got a grassroots support. I think he may make it. Quite a few of them will make it. You know, and people are tired of political parties. I see also people voting for independent candidates, but the margin that they require to be in parliament is too big. But a few
you think 50,000 is too big?
Hey, bro, 50,000 is difficult. Eh? Let me tell you, the political party Black First, Land First, which was left in the last elections, with all those numbers, it was a registered political party, it pulled 20,000 votes, led by Angela Nkama, who's very famous.
Yeah, but you see now, we are engaging on a social experiment now. Podcasters from the other side of Podcast and Chill.
Yes.
We're going to register as independent candidates. We're trying to see if this democracy really works, and we're going to put it to the test. So are you saying that with all those millions of followers that Fresh has here on this podcast, with you and what McG has, we cannot field 50 people to go and vote for a candidate that will go on parliament parliament and represent them?
My brother, let me tell you, I don't know why you, Fresh, and McG and everybody came so late with this concept.
Yeah.
You are very late. Let me tell you what is your winning point.
Yes.
And your winning point is where the IEC and political parties have failed. The EFF was the first political party to have its podcast about 2 months back.
Right.
The ANC 2 weeks ago.
Right.
They always copy what the EFF does, by the way.
The Youth League.
Yeah. Julius is gonna kill us.
Yeah.
but The EFF is smart. You see, that's the advantage of having youth.
Right.
You go and you do things that excite the youth.
And that's what we can give the EFF.
And that's what you and McG and DJ Fresh, with your millions of followers, millions. I mean, I was looking at Fresh on Twitter. He's got over 3 million, if not 4 million followers. Yep. Imagine if I say, my followers, I'm going to parliament. 4 million. Hey, Baba, he will have more than 10 seats in parliament. Although some people are not supporting him because he's a politician, they are supporting him because he's a DJ, he's a celebrity. But you are doing the right thing, although a little bit late. You've got, you know, a few, 3 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, you can do that. The power of social media
will be
and technology, this is where it's going to work for your advantage. The fact that some people will say, oh, I'm going to vote for McG and this bunch of people, I'm tired of politicians talking manifestos and policies.
Right.
Understand?
We need
that
an
is
insider.
No longer a selling thing. Manifesto, you might just have two or three things like a project that says, these are the people we are going to deploy. Who are they? And our manifesto is, we want free education, we want land to be returned to the African people, and we want to create jobs and security in the country. Three or four things, and you run with it. Trust me, you will pull a number of votes. I don't know why did you come with this already.
But we're here now.
You should have actually appointed me and paid me very well to be your advisor on this whole process.
It is never too late.
Listen, I think you guys are doing something in the right move. Fresh hasn't engaged me on that.
I'll talk to you.
He wants to go on a massage.
Some massage.
And imagine if you get involved with this podcast on that, and I have to sit and analyze your performance and your ideas. I'll undress you guys.
I'll be honored if you did the undressing.
Yeah.
But I must warn you, I wear a vest, so you'll have a lot of undressing to do. Thank you so much, Botsan. Technically, I wasn't supposed to be here this week, but thank you for having me. And thank you very much to Fresh and you, Botsan, for letting me sit in this chair. But it was a little bit different. But if Fresh asks again, mean I'm going to show up. And thanks to all of you for watching, and hope you have a wow week ahead. We've been coming to you from the M Studios, part of the Africa Podcast Network. A big thank you to the team for accommodating me and the rest of the team for running the show. Pezulu Works for the cinematography, our engineer Otis the Flow Fraser, Bokang or Botsang Mwailua. Yeah, I'm not going to get it wrong. Botsang Mwailua, our creative producer Kuvesh Mahan. Our show producer, Keletso Murisa King, and you can email us, or them, because I won't be here. I'll be busy trying to field myself as an independent candidate on waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Thank you to everyone who's made the show possible. Fresh, come back soon. Me and him are going to continue talking. So basically, you're saying I need to print T-shirts and put up posters in the street.
I'm not going to advise you on that. Let's talk offline. People may think that I'm running as an independent candidate.